Drama on One.
Sundays at 8 p.m.
rte.ie/drama on one.
Drama on One.
And now, In the Wings, a programme where artists talk about their work and their journey towards performance. Tonight, writer and director Pat Collins and actor Michael Murphy talk about working on Eternal Lanes of Joy, a drama that recreates Patrick Kavanagh's epic journey on foot from his home in Inniskeen in County Monaghan to Dublin in the year 1931. Eternal Lanes of Joy, written and directed by Pat Collins, is next week's Drama on One.
My name is Pat Collins. I'm a film documentary director and a drama director, and this is my first foray into radio drama. The name of the piece is Eternal Lanes of Joy, which is a line from Prelude, a poem by Patrick Kavanagh.
My name is Michael Murphy. I play Patrick Kavanagh, younger and older.
Kavanagh is probably the first poet that I really took an interest in, I think, even as a teenager, before I was interested in poetry or before I was interested in reading. Or I think Kavanagh probably reached me in a way that nobody else did at the time. So he's been there or thereabouts for as long as I remember.
The play is about a journey that Kavanagh made when he was about 30 years of age, when he walked from his home in Inniskeen in County Monaghan into Dublin, ostensibly to visit or to meet A.E. Russell, who was the man who first published his poetry.
Kavanagh's walk to Dublin, you know, he was a working farmer at the time, and he did want to become a writer, and he was a writer, but he wanted to be a full-time writer. And I think he felt something inside himself that needed to break out. And A.E. George Russell had published Kavanagh in the Irish Statesman in 1929 or 1930. So I think Kavanagh, it was a very deliberate setting out to go and meet A.E. And then I think it was maybe either romantic or it was a kind of a pilgrimage that he decided that he'd walk. I mean, he had a bicycle. There was a train. You know, he could have gone other ways, but he set out. I think there was a romanticism as well about the beggar kind of lifestyle and being on the road. I think he talks about reading Jim Tully, and Jim Tully was an Irish-American writer in the 20s who wrote some great books about his journeys being a hobo in America. And Kavanagh had read him. So I think there was a kind of a romance, almost like an earlier version of the Kerouac on the road thing, you know.
Mum and Dad are both from Monaghan. Mum's from New Bliss and Dad's from Castlechaine. So I have a kind of affinity with it as a county, and I always loved it, you know, going there as a kid. Dad's people were farmers, if you like. So when we would visit during the summer, we would often be there with aunts and uncles and cousins and, you know, in farming situations all over the summer. It was idyllic, actually, bucolic, as the fella says. And I loved the landscape. It was a beautiful place to drive through all the time. People talk about it being the egg basket county, if you see it from the air, because of the rolling drumlins. It's like a little basket of eggs, green eggs, obviously, but eggs nonetheless.
I think he was very individual. And I think when he came to Dublin and when he moved from the farm in Monaghan to Dublin, I think he took a stance, I think. And whether it came from insecurity or not, I don't know. But I think he made a lot of enemies very quickly. And I'm not sure that he was able to hold back in a way that other people kind of know when to remain silent. I think he had to be honest, I think, you know.
And at 14, I read Terry Flynn, and I was completely captivated then, because it was like, I'm a romantic comedy specialist, so if somebody puts a romantic comedy idea in my head, I just go, like, I cried at P.S. I Love You, which is a terrible thing to say live on the radio. It's a personal detail. I don't mind you printing that. But that's how bad I am in terms of romance. So when I read Terry Flynn, even though there are things in Terry Flynn which are things that nowadays we realise that actually behind of what Kavanagh was saying, there were things that we wouldn't approve of or wouldn't be able to stand over going on, it was still a beautiful book that a boy's head could get lost in the romance of it all.
I think it's so individual, so accurate. And that's why it's kind of universal, is that it's so accurate. It's kind of difficult to read now in terms of, you know, given recent, I suppose, developments in terms of the way we read old texts and some of the stuff that's acceptable and not acceptable anymore. I mean, you couldn't be publishing a book like Terry Flynn now for some of the references that are in it. But it's just the sheer electricity and energy that's going through the book. It's kind of like reading Pat McCabe or The Butcher Boy for the first time, and you go, my God, like the energy and electricity going through that. It doesn't happen very often, and it's pure personality, I think, and control as well, control of the material. but allowing that electricity and energy to come through. And I think Kavanagh and, say, Pat McCabe certainly have it.
I think there's a source there up in that, you know, hinterland, up in that in those townlands where the Heaneys start writing out of the Kavanaghs and the Kavanaghs start writing out of somebody else. But that coterie of people, the A.J. Cronins, the Kavanaghs, the Miles and the Gopalines, that gang of lads that were around in Dublin at the time, that literati, they were very, very influential.
You know, I do think he's a Catholic writer, and I think he is a kind of a peasant poet to a certain extent. But there are two aspects that, you know, Irish poets after Kavanagh are kind of shying away from to a certain extent. But Kavanagh wasn't worried about that, I think. He knew that he was being confined to being a peasant poet and resented that. But there was an awful lot more going on with Kavanagh than, you know, the small fields. And things like a sense of place are very important, and especially when you set out, I think sense of place are important. But you transcend sense of place too, so that every place, you know, it doesn't matter where you are really, as Kavanagh talks about, you know, a lifetime to get to know a small field. And I think that's true, but it doesn't matter where the field is. In a way, it didn't matter to Kavanagh whether the field was in Monaghan or West Cork or Oklahoma, you know. He was influenced by where he came from, but he broke through all of that really to be that kind of universal poet who's celebrating the ordinary things in life.
It's been brilliant to work with Pat, because Pat is encyclopedic when it comes to Kavanagh. We'll pull out, you know, something, you know, as we're making the piece, we'll pull out a new piece and say, actually, we might do a little bit of this. And, you know, it's a very malleable, flexible way of working. It's really terrific.
He does write in The Green Fool about his journey. I kind of feel that he's making some of it up as he's going along. And I kind of took that in good spirit and said that we can make things up as well. And so there's a reimagining of his journey. It's not 100% accurate to facts. We've made up kind of people that he might have met along the way, young woman, an old woman, blacksmith, and we've kind of dramatised those scenes of those encounters. And then it becomes very much then as well a kind of an internal monologue, I think, that the actor Michael Murphy inhabits Kavanagh as an older man and as a younger man.
I work a lot on my own, I do a lot of solo shows, but this is like, this is ideal for me in terms of just being able to arrive into a place like, okay, I thought the other day, so I was going home and I was thinking, okay, the universe is saying, Michael, you're about to die. And why are you about to die, Michael? It's because I was put in RTE to do a radio play and I was visited here. You know, I've been here 3 days on my own, but I get visited every couple of hours by people I love. Now, some of them I've never met before. John Connors, amazing man. Brilliant, brilliant performer. John McArdle, whom I've known for years and I'm very, very fond of him and Tommy. Catherine Walsh, who I've soldiered with in the New Electric Ballroom. Rosaline Lennon in the same play. Eamon Owens, who nearly drowned me in the middle of the Butcher Boy film. Eamon Hunt, who I've known for years. Like Charlie McKenna, everybody from past lives, beautiful, creative past lives, has been brought in here during the week to work with us. So I think the universe is going, okay, Michael, your time is up and we're just going to bring you all these lovely people for one last time to see them all. But it's been brilliant. It's been brilliant.
I was actually on holidays in Spain and I was reading Laurie Lee's book as I walked out one midsummer's morning. And I was kind of lost in that and I was really enjoying it. And I had a memory of reading, probably from Antoinette Quinn's book, about him walking to Dublin. Kavanagh took 3 days to walk, 2 nights and 3 days. And maybe it was just the kind of the being in Spain and reading that book of Laurie Lee's, which is about his journey through Spain, which was around 1934. And I knew that Kavanagh had walked to Dublin in 31. And I didn't really want to do anything on Laurie Lee's journey, but I thought in an Irish context, it'd be ideal to do something with Kavanagh and try to recreate the sound of Ireland in 1931 for radio. It's not something that I'd feel that would work on film. And I think the freedom of radio actually would be great for it. So I contacted my friend Kevin Bruin in RTE here and just said, what do you think of the idea? And he was very encouraging. And then I was up in the Patrick Kavanagh Centre in Inniskeen and talking to Darren McCreesh there. And he liked the idea and he gave me some development money. And then so with Kevin and with a script, we kind of applied to BAI and we got funding for it and off we went. It was very important for us, I think, to record some of the journey, like on the roads themselves, you know, up around Inniskeen. And from very early on, I kind of thought, you know, there's a scene in it where he's leaving for Dublin and he's having a discussion with his mother saying, I'm going to walk to Dublin and meet AE. And I just thought it would be great. opportunity to actually set that scene in the kitchen where it would have happened. And we approached the family and asked them if we could record. So we got the actor Michael Murphy playing Kavanagh and Catherine Walsh, the actress, playing Mrs. Kavanagh. And we recorded that scene up there one evening in September. And being in Kavanagh's house, it was kind of an amazing thing to be in the actual house where Kavanagh would have written his early poems. And just kind of, the old walls are still there. You get still, it's a very modern house now, but you still get the old part of the house. And there's the thick walls of the cottage. And it was just a beautiful sound in there. And kind of a deep kind of silence, you know.
So I was in UCD for a while. Jerry Stembridge was a producer here at the time. He saw me in a couple of plays when I was in college. And he started my formal professional acting thing, if you like, because he offered me a job in TV.
In 1988, I would have researched and written a kind of a local book in Drimaleague in West Cork, which was a kind of a history of the 100th anniversary of the foundation of the Clannagale GA Club. And I kind of compiled it together into a book, which was a very kind of rudimentary book, really. But it kind of did give me a taste for research and for writing. I think research more than writing. And I had an inkling for that. So I ended up going to Galway, to the Galway Film Centre, and did a 6-weekend film foundation course.
Jacques Lecoq is a school in Paris. It has moved to Avignon, actually, in recent years. But it was an extraordinary school, and he was an amazing guru. He began, actually, his career, if you like, as a physiotherapist, effectively, and re-educating people who had been injured in the war to mobilise and walk again. And then he began to study movement more keenly and graduated from, you know, the kind of physiotherapy end of things into movement for theatre, and then became one of the most, you know, lauded and respected, you know, teachers of movement in the world. And so effectively I went to train as an actor in a school where the training for the actor was done almost entirely and exclusively through movement. So we weren't big text people. Text came later, but if you like, in theatre work, it's important that actors work with text, subtext, but they must also work with the language of the body and the subtext of the body. And they're very complex. That's a very complex combination. If you get them all right, there's a strange authenticity to the performance. But if you ignore the body and the subtext of the body, then you're losing out on 80% of communication. So it was an extraordinary place to be. It was multicultural. It was really, really vibrant, and you just saw styles of theatre that you would never have seen just through people who were, you know, who were your fellow students.
And then very gradually I became an editor of a film journal in Galway, and then programmed the Galway Film Festival. And my first documentary, I was nearly 30 when I made my first film, and that was on Michael Hartnett, called Necklace of Rins. I'd loved Hartnett's poetry, you know, kind of all through my 20s, and he was such a kind of an interesting individual. Again, not unlike Kavanagh in some ways, where he kind of went up against maybe whatever orthodoxy was there at the time, you know, giving up writing in English and going back to Irish, and I suppose political as well in his own way. And I think Kavanagh in the same way was kind of going up against the orthodoxy. You know, the Celtic Twilight, I think, was a kind of an important movement, and the Gaelic Revival was an important movement. But Kavanagh, I suppose, just reacted against it, I think. And under different circumstances, I think if he was born 20 years earlier, he might have been part of it, you know.
I guess when you train in École Jacques Lecoq Paris, you aren't just a performer, you're an originator of material as well. You constantly make work. So you begin a week and you make work, themed work, for the end of every week for criticism by the teachers at the end of that week. And it means that everybody becomes a writer, everybody becomes a director, everybody becomes a performer. So you're kind of multifaceted when you come out of the place. And I think it's only natural then that, as well as being a performer, as well as being an actor, you know, and I make a distinction between actors and performers, but as well as being both of those things, when you come out of Lecoq's, you end up with this other desire, need, I suppose, to explore and continue to create work. And sometimes I get to do that by directing, because, you know, there's another, you know, aspect to theatre where, you know, the director is supposed to have an overall vision of what the production is there to do. I get to do that, but I also get to self-direct in one-man shows, which I've written and created as well. So the creation of those one-man shows is a combination of me writing and then, if you like, taking off the writer's hat and forgetting that I did write it, and then going into a studio and directing myself in the movement sequences of the plays. And with my one-man shows, I play multiples of characters in those shows. So there's The Man in the Woman's Shoes, I Hear You, and Joyce, and the latest one, which is called The Mysterious Case of Kitsy Rainey. And in those shows, I probably play 30 characters over the course of the shows. So it's kind of important that I'm able to make very quick, very visual representations of characters, not just vocally, but physically, to give the audience the possibility of seeing them all. So I can change between three or four characters in 5 seconds. And it's not up to me. I may have a facility to do that, a certain ability, but I know that the audience will see them, that I can show them those characters as fast as I want and they will see them. That's the gift of the human imagination. And you discover very quickly through intuition, as you have that experience as well, where you can tell when something sits down. The audience, they let you know that, okay, you know, we've heard enough now, move on, please. Or else stay with us a little bit longer there because we haven't had the time to process that idea. So after the first three or four shows, you kind of go back into the studio in your head and redirect yourself slightly or make little notes to yourself. And my partner, Ethan, is fantastic at this sort of stuff. She's a brilliant editor. So when I'm writing and I'm producing final scripts, she'll do final edits with me. Curiously, I wouldn't say directing oneself. I would say it's more about just inhabiting, just getting up on the floor, walking around the place and letting your intuition guide you.
I think it's trying to be influenced by life, I think. Be influenced by your experience of life. And I think maybe that's why I like having it in some ways. It's everything is kind of filtered through him. And I think kind of having some sense of the transcendent, I think, is the thing that that Kavanagh is after all the time. There's a book by Una Agnew as well, which is about Kavanagh, and she writes about that element of Kavanagh, which is, it's semi-religious, but it's universal, really. It's not just about the Catholic religion, or it's not about the one true God. It's about loving the small things or the ordinary things. And I think that's what Kavanagh was supremely good at, and I don't think anyone's ever kind of matched it. I think, you know, there's been a lot of great Irish poets, but I think Kavanagh had something. Heaney talks about this, I think, in terms of the sense of place, where a lot of the poets are kind of up on the kind of hillside, looking back and forth in time, looking at history and geography and all the different disciplines. Whereas, like, Kavanagh is kind of like the flower that's springing straight out of the ground. You can't really replicate him because he is, you know, I think, rather than being a writer who's trying to be about something, he just is, you know.
That was writer and director Pat Collins and actor Michael Murphy talking about working on Eternal Lanes of Joy.
Drama on One. Sundays at 8 p.m.
rte.ie/drama on one.
Drama on One.